We are in Genesis. I'm calling it lesson 30 because it's the 30th lesson that we have had in Genesis. It's actually chapter 34. Now, as I told you a minute ago, I missed y'all because of my sickness. I got to be honest with you, this is not a lesson that I'm going to miss. This is a lesson that I wish I could miss, if you ask me. This is a lesson where I do not understand why this story is even in the Bible. Okay? I do not understand it. I do not understand why God allowed this story to transpire in the life of Jacob and his sons and his daughter Dinah. I do not understand that. There are many things that I do not understand about the Bible. You might think that I understand greatly. I understand many technical things. I understand many historical things. But when it comes down to circumstances of life, I do not understand why this had to happen. So if you were asked today to leave this class with one thought in mind as to what you received from this class at the end of the lesson, I hope it would be this. Humans are terribly sinful. And sinful humans do terrible things to other people. Good people that have to live with those things the rest of their life. And God uses those things in His way and in His time to accomplish His will. And I don't understand why some of the things have to be as bad as they are. As we left at the end of the last lesson, Jacob had moved his family down from Haran. They had gone to a place called Manahan, and then they landed in a place called Peniel. And there in Peniel, he met his brother Esau that he had not seen in 21 years. The last time he had seen his brother Esau, he had treated him dirty. He had stolen the blessing, the prayer of Isaac from his brother who rightly belonged to him. He had purchased his birthright and then he had stolen the prayer. And now his father Isaac had sent him away to go and make a way for himself and to make a family, gain whatever wealth he was going to gain, and return when he could stand and live on his own. So at 71 years of age, Jacob had to leave the security of his father Isaac and his twin brother Esau and all that they had, and Isaac was probably the wealthiest man in that region, and he had to go with nothing. He landed at a place called Bethel, and he met the Lord for the first time. The first time we have an interaction with Jacob and the Lord is when he's 71 years old at a place called Luz, which is going to, in today's lesson, the name is going to be changed to Bethel, of that area. Then he went on to Haran. He gets into a situation with his father-in-law. He ends up with the wrong wife. Then he gets the wife he wanted. And then he gets the maids that go along with it. And then he gets these 12 kids, of which it's 11 boys and one girl. And finally, it's time for him to gather his wealth, and he gathered the wealth, and Joseph is 1 year old. Joseph is 1 year old, and they leave Haran, and they end up at Peniel. They have a time with Esau, and then finally Esau comes back down to live in the mountains of Seir, and Jacob promises to come to him and to meet him here with his father, either in Beersheba or in Hebron, but Jacob does not keep his promise. Jacob turns, and he moves over, and he goes to Succoth. And he dwells there for a few years. And then from there, he moves on to a place that we call it Shechem. But Shechem, it's not going to be called Shechem until after Shechem dies. Jacob's going to call it that after Shechem dies. And then finally, it's going to come down to Bethel, which is Luz. He's going to name that. And then he's going to land in Bethlehem, where Benjamin is born, just outside north of Bethlehem. Benjamin's going to be born, but the love of his life, Rachel, is going to die in giving birth to Benjamin. And then he's going to land in Hebron. So let me show you something here. Chapter 34 begins. It is 2,242 years since the creation of Adam. Remember, we're running this timeline since the creation of Adam. We're keeping tabs because we want to be able to work backwards and find out how old, how long, when was creation? When was the Exodus? When was Jacob born? When was Joseph born? When did these events occur? Which Pharaoh did Joseph serve under? We have to know the timeline so that we know where to put him in the history of events. Jacob left Haran with Joseph, and Joseph is 1 year old at the beginning of this chapter. That's where we are. They live in Succoth for a while. Then they move to Shechem for a while. While they're in Shechem, Dinah goes out to visit her friends, and a tragedy happens with Shechem. We're going to see that story right up off the bat at the opening of this text. Then because of that whole circumstance, the Lord's going to tell them to move to Bethel. We don't know how long these events are going on. And then finally they move on down, and here's the birth of Benjamin, and then they finally make it to Hebron, and that is chapter 35, where they're moving to Hebron. They move to Bethel, chapter 35. We don't know where we are, but all we do know is when we hit chapter 37, 17 years have passed, because it tells us how old Joseph is at the beginning of chapter 37. So all of this has to transpire. Here's the deal, and we talked about this in the last lesson. Dinah, at this time, when they leave Haran, Dinah cannot be more than 3 years old, maybe a little more, maybe 4.5 years old, but surely not 5 years old. Because Dinah was the seventh child of Leah, and in order to get the seven children in, plus the other four for the other ones in between those, with the births being laid out the way I've laid them out for you in a couple of lessons, it's impossible for Dinah to be more than 4.5 years old. She's probably closer to 3. And Joseph is 1. And so as we pick up, we pick up right here. Dinah is old enough for a man to desire her and to have relationships with her. Okay? So how old can that be? Let me just fill you in on something. We have always said that Mary, the mother of Jesus, was the age of about 12 or 13 when she had Jesus. That probably is a true fact. That's probably a true fact. But my question was, how young could a girl be when she was betrothed to a man? And at what age could a girl be married to a man in this time? Okay? And the Jewish Virtual Library is a very wonderful site for you to go look at. It's in English, it's in Hebrew, it's in many other languages too. And the Jews are doing a great job that as their literature is being able to be typed and digitized to where it can be searched, they're putting it on this virtual Jewish library. It is like going to a Jewish school and walking into their library, and they are working feverishly to get all of their books and all of their history and everything online. Sure enough, there on that Jewish virtual library, we can learn and have learned, and I have learned, that a girl could be betrothed to a man upon the celebration of her weaning party. In other words, when she ceased from nursing her mother, they would have a party about age 4. At that point, the girl could be betrothed to a man. Betrothed means engaged, okay, to a man for at some later date to become his wife. Reading on, we find that the soonest she could marry, and there's not an age on it, but there is a circumstance. The soonest that she could marry the man that she is betrothed to is the month following her very first cycle, monthly cycle. Let me put it that way, okay? So that means the month following her very first monthly, whatever age that occurred, be it 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years of age. That bothered the dickens out of me. Just bothered the dickens out of me. Because that means, you know, children are marrying. And so then I thought, how widespread is this? And so I then turned around and I thought, what do other cultures do? So I pulled up Islam cultures. And there was a man who was 52 years old in the Islamic religion that is very well known. He was 52 years old. He was betrothed to a girl who was 6 years old and consummated the marriage with that girl at the age of 9. His name was Muhammad, the founder of the Islamic religion. That was 2.5 millennium after, a millennium after this story in the Bible with Dinah. 2,500 years after this, that occurred. Then I searched a little further to find out that is still practiced today. And that occurred back in 631, 670 something AD, whenever that happened with Muhammad. And it's still a practice today in all of the predominant Islamic countries, which means a girl can be chosen to be a wife upon the time she stops nursing and then can be betrothed as soon as she has her first monthly cycle, can actually be wed and consummate the marriage. Come to find out, looking on, pretty much America is the only place where we turn our nose at that. Pretty much in America. Because then I found out when looking at tribes in Africa, it's pretty standard practice. Pretty standard. Oh, some of them have developed some cultures of changing that. And by the way, that has those changes have occurred because of the missionaries, the Christian missionaries who have come into those areas. The Livingstons, the Luther Rice, and many of the missionaries who have gone and spent their lives in these areas. Well, with that, we pick up. When they got into Shechem, we don't know how old Dinah was. She could have been 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. We don't know how old she is. And here's what the story is. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, she's the last daughter, last child that Leah has, by the way, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to visit the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, hang on, let me just start. I want to tell you something about Hivites, okay? You've heard the word Hittite? Okay? Okay. Hittites were the descendants of Heth, H-E-T-H. Within the Hittites, there are branches of Hittites. You have the Hivites, and the word Hivite means middle land dwellers. That means that they lived halfway or about halfway between the Mediterranean Sea and the big sand sea to the east in the desert going towards Iraq. They lived between the sand and the water, so they're middle dwellers. Esau was living with the Horites. The Horites are Hittites also. Horite means cave dwellers. Got that? So Esau's living with the Hittites, who are called cave dwellers. Jacob is living with the Hivites, who are Hittites, called the middle land or land dwellers. And they're all Hittites through that whole region, all the way up and down the Jordan River and on the west side of the Dead Sea and all the way down through the mountains. Those are all Hittites, and there's a bunch of them. That makes a big, important difference when we get into the story of what's going on. So Shechem was a son of Hamor, who was a Hivite, which is, they are Hittites. It's a clan of the Hittites. The prince of the land saw her, and he took her, and he lay with her by force. Not by choice of hers, but by force. He was a young man. We do not know how old he was, but we know something. When Dinah went out to visit the other girls in the neighborhood, be them Canaanites, he was smitten by her, and he took her, and he had a sexual relationship with her. And he was deeply attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the girl and spoke tenderly to her. He forced himself on her, but guess what? He was just a smitten young man. Just smitten. He says he loved her. It wasn't that he did it to her just because he wanted to. He did it to her because he loved her. Now, here's the problem. What he did to her married him to her. Because in the scripture, a sexual consummation in a relationship is a marriage. Even if you have five or six other wives and you do it with another wife, men, you are married in the scripture. If you had no wives and you did it with a virgin woman, you are married. The problem is a cultural problem, is that he did not have the permission of her father, nor had he entered into any of that type of relationship that he should have in order to do this, to marry her. Going on, it says this. Get to turn the page, don't we? So Shechem, he knows he's done wrong. He's a teenager. The best is getting to him. So he spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get this young girl for a wife. Get me this young girl. Father, do what we need to do. I love this girl. Oh, she is just amazing." You could just hear it. You know how beautiful it is? She's fairer form. She's just gorgeous. She's sweet talking. She's tender. Father, whatever we have to do, let's go get her. Let's get her father to give me the blessing for her to be my wife. We don't know if he's trying to cover up or anything. We don't know that. All we know is he's in love. Now, Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Defile, that's an interesting word. What he had done was wrong. So, in the development of what God approves of and what he doesn't approve of in this first book of the Bible, somewhere they understood that in God's realm of thinking, that this act that Shechem has done to Dinah, he has defiled her. He has done something. Defiled does not mean good. It means bad. He's done something bad to her. So Jacob kept silent until they came. He didn't say anything about it. Father just heard it, took care. But his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob kept silent until they came. He wanted his sons to be part of the decision because they're growing up. Don't know how old they are. Don't really know how old Joseph is. We know he's not 17 yet. So we also know that because Joseph is not 17 yet, then the very first son, Reuben, has not reached the age of 30 yet, because Reuben was 13 years older than Joseph. So it goes on to say, "Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him. And now the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by laying with Jacob's daughter. For such a thing ought not be done." They're mad, and they're heartbroken. You ever realize that our kids do that to us, for those of us who are parents? They do something and it makes us mad. But sometimes the broken heart they give us is a whole lot worse than the madness. You know what I'm talking about? It just, you want to be angry, but you're just so broken hearted over it. And yes, you may strike out and be angry and try to bring punishment to them, but your punishment of them never vindicates and brings to you a peace and a calm for the and to heal the broken heart, to glue it back together. What's sad about that is, and it's not in the notes, it just happens to be my observation. A kid that's bad and breaks the mother and father's heart every day of every year of their life, at some point in time, you just say, well, he did it again. It's that kid that only breaks your heart once or twice. Those are the really broken hearts. You know how it is. I'm not going to ask for any of you to raise your hands, but there's not one of you in here that did not break your parents' heart at some point in time. Verse 8, but Hamar spoke with them saying, Hamar's coming out as a politician. God is a politician. He's going to make this work. The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him in marriage. He should have been quiet and left it at that. But he goes on to say something else, which tells us that Hamar had a larger picture in his mind. And intermarry with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourselves. Thus you shall live with us, and the land shall be open before you. Live and trade in it and acquire property in it. This is Hamar. This is the man that Jacob had already purchased a big plot of land for 100 head of sheep. He already owns property there in Shechem. This is the third piece of property that Abraham's family owns. Abraham bought the wells in Beersheba. He bought the cave in Mamre or Hebron to bury his wife, and the field in front of it, and the trees, the oaks of Mamre. He bought those too. And now up in Shechem, Jacob owns a plot of land that he's bought with 100 head of sheep. And now Haman, who sold that land to him, says, tell you what, you give your daughter to my son Shechem to be his wife. And I tell you what, you'll be able to live here with us and buy more land and dwell on these pastures. And the rest, if you have any more daughters, they can come and marry our sons. And our sons will come and marry your daughters. And we'll be this just big old happy family. And on the surface with Jacob, that probably sounds okay in some ways. The sons are not jee-hawing with it. You know what jee-haw is. You know, okay, got that. Okay, some of you don't. I'll explain another time. The sons are not going along with this. And they don't want to have anything to do with it for a reason. We're going to find that reason out. But right after Hamar speaks to Jacob, Shechem, who is in love with Dinah, just cannot help himself. And he has to speak too. And he says this. Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, if I find favor in your sight, then I will give whatever you say to me. Ask me ever so much bridal payment and gift, and I will give according as you say to me, but give me the girl in marriage. Whatever it costs, she's desperate. That's a good one. He is desperate. Whatever it costs, I'll pay. I'll pay. I'll pay. Well, folks, if some of y'all will slip back a few years, maybe a few decades for some of us, almost four decades for me, there was a time in my life where with whatever I had to do to earn my wife's hand in marriage, I would have done it. And the truth of the matter is, almost four decades later, whatever my wife desires, I'll do it. 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the morning. When Madison and Kay have been watching some TV show, they get a hankering for a Coke. And they come into where I've been asleep for several hours, and they say, Daddy, Daddy, we'd like a Coke. And you know what Daddy does? I get up with all the joy in my heart, and I put on my shorts, and I put on my shirt, and I change clothes, and I go hop in my Hummer, and I'm going after them a Coke. And if they want me to go to Galveston to get them a seashell off the seashore, I'll go down there and hunt. There's not many down there, but I'll go hunt, and I'll find them one, and I will bring it back to them, whatever it takes. Shechem is in that position with Dinah. By the way, Shechem's also in problems. We've got to also remember, where's the Lord in all this? Remember, the Lord is setting up scenarios to where when he gives the law to the Jewish people, the descendants of these 12 tribes, Benjamin's not born yet, but he will be, and there'll be a tribe there, that every law written in Exodus and Leviticus and in Numbers and in Deuteronomy, every law comes back to some story in the book of Genesis. There are no new laws that have not already been established in Genesis with a framework of a story to drop that seed and plant that seed of what the Lord approves and doesn't approve. So when we get to the book of Exodus in chapter 22, verse 16, the law is going to be placed down. It's going to be expanded over there too. It says, if a man seduces, you got that, seduces. And that's what Shechem did to Dinah. Seduces a virgin, and that's what Dinah was, who is not engaged. She was not engaged. And lies with her, which is what he did. He must pay a dowry for her to be his wife. So evidently, this custom is already in place in that world. And Shechem, even being a Canaanite, knows he must pay for her to the father, her father, for her to be his wife. He's already made her his wife physically, but he has got to work a deal, and whatever it costs, Shechem is willing. Shechem did not come to Jacob as a politician. Shechem came as a love-struck, stupid, sick, young, teenage boy who had found the love of his life. His dad went as a politician. Verse 13. But Jacob's sons answered Shechem and his father Hamor with deceit. They got a plan, in other words. Yeah. They're going to trick him. They're going to be deceitful. And spoke to them because he had defiled Dinah, his sister, their sister. And they said to them, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. You remember what circumcision is? Circumcision is a covenant between God and his chosen people. There is a relationship there. It is an outward sign of an inward commitment. It is an outward sign of a Jew's inward commitment to God. It was an outward sign of an inward commitment of God to the Jews. This is not a sign to God and the Canaanites. This is a sign to God and the Jews. There's a theology, a God thinking that is there that has to be in place. And they are using it as an excuse to the reason why they cannot give Dinah to this uncircumcised young man. Verse 15, they put a twist on it. Here's the deceit. Here's where they're headed. It's a take it or leave it statement. Only on the condition, this condition, will we consent to you. If you will become like us, in that every male of you, all the men, all the boys, will be circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and you will take our daughters for themselves, ourselves, and we will live with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and go. Take it or leave it. All you guys got to go out there, all you Canaanites, they're under the control of Hamor. You must be circumcised. If you don't choose to do that, the deal's off. We're taking Dinah and we're out of here. Well, Shechem will pay any price. Any price. Doesn't matter to him. He's in on this plan. Look at here. Now, their words seem reasonable to Hamor and to Shechem, Hamor's son. But think what listen to what the son says. And the young man did not delay to do the thing because he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. Now he was more respected than all the household of his father. His father's thinking, we'll work this deal. Shechem is saying, amen, amen, deal done. That's the payment. Let's get her done. It doesn't mean that he went immediately to do it. It just meant he accepted the plan and said, that's what we will do. How do we know that? It's because in the very next verse, they're going to have to go down to the gate to talk to all the men that are under all the control of Hamor. And here we go. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, these men are friendly with us. Therefore, let them live in the land and trade in it. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters in marriage and give our daughters to them. So far, so good. Only on this condition will the men consent to us to live with us, to become one people. That every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Now, if you were sitting at that gate and you just heard that, and you hadn't bought in on that plan, I'm wondering what would be going through your mind. You want to do what? You're right. In order to get them to approve to it, Hamor makes a statement. The next statement that he makes is a statement that he has not made to Jacob. Will not their livestock and their property and all their animals be ours? You see, Jacob was the wealthiest man in that part of the country. He probably owned more than all of them together owned. And so if we get us circumcised, we're going to absorb all of what is in Jacob's family because we're just going to be one happy family. If we need what they have, it's ours because we're family, one tribe. And all who went out of the gate of the city listened to Hamor and to his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. You see why I wish I could have passed up this lesson? I don't understand this. 3 days later. You ready? Now, it came about on the third day when the men were in pain. I'm just having what we call a pregnant pause here. For y'all to all think through what has happened, okay? When the men are in pain, the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Reuben was the first son. Got that? Simeon was the second, Levi was the third, Judah was the fourth. Simeon and Levi, son two and son three, what do? Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brother, took their sword and came upon the city unawares and killed every male. It wasn't all the sons of Jacob. It was two of the sons of Jacob. How did two of the sons of Jacob overcome and kill every male in that city? And it had to be because of their deceit, because they talked them into being circumcised, and on the third day when they were in pain, they were unable to defend themselves. You got it? It's the deceit of Simeon and Levi. They killed them. And Jacob's sons came upon the slain that they'd killed, and they looted the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their flocks, they took their herds, they took their donkeys, and that which was in the city, and that which was in the field, and they captured and looted all their wealth, and all their little ones, their babies, and all their wives, even all that was in the house. They didn't kill the wives. They didn't kill the little ones. They killed all those who would have been aged 13 of the guys and up who were circumcised males. So now Jacob's family is in charge of all the Canaanite women that were under Hamar's control and all the little babies. And they have absorbed into them all the wealth of Hamar's village, as opposed to Hamar's village absorbing all the wealth of Jacob into it. So Jacob now has a whole bunch more mouths to feed and a whole bunch more people to take care of. But Jacob was not happy about this. And Jacob said to Simeon and to Levi, the two sons, "You have brought trouble on me by making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites." Canaan had a son by the name of Perez. And one of the larger groups besides the Hittites. Perez had his tribe, and it was the Perizzites, and they were living in that area also. The Hittites are there, the Canaanites are there, the Perizzites, and all the other ites, because there's a whole bunch of them, are living in other places. Jacob is worried because now there's a stench about Jacob and his family, and it's going to go out to the Canaanites, it's going to go out to the Perizzites, and "My men are few in number," he says. "They will gather together against me and attack me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my household." Oh, my soul, Jacob is afraid because of this deadly slaughter that has happened, that all of their relatives will come upon Jacob and his family and do the same to them. And Jacob is beside himself. Well, what did Simeon and Levi say in reply to that? "Should he treat our sister as a harlot?" Young guys, Don't think through the possible scenario and the possible repercussions of what may happen. Jacob has thought through the big picture and realizes that his whole family may be in trouble. His sons have thought this far. He shouldn't have done it. They deserve to die because one guy, Shechem, shouldn't have done it to our daughter. Therefore, all of them, all those males should have died. We'll think about that when we get on down into the story, because that is going to lay the groundwork for some things that are going to happen to Simeon and to Levi later on. Verse 1 of the next chapter, 35, says, "Then God said to Jacob, 'Arise.'" God knew what the fear of Jacob was. He says, "Arise, go up to Bethel and live there and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." You know, in other words, go back to where you first met me. And so up here on our little map, they're going to leave Shechem and they're going back to Luz, or the place called Bethel. It's not called Bethel yet. The place is called Luz. Moses is only telling us it's called Bethel so that we'll know where it is. "And so Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, 'Put away your foreign gods which are among you, and purify yourselves, and change your garments. And let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God, who answered me in the days of my distress, and has been with me wherever I have gone.' So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods which they had, and the rings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was near them, near Shechem." Oh, my soul. Can you imagine? Jacob has been allowing the worship of false gods and idols to be in his household all the way time until they're ready to go down to Bethel. And what's happening with Jacob here is what has happened to many of us in our lives, where we've had that aha moment where we realize we're fixing to meet God and we need to clean up our act and we need to purify our family and we need to rid our household of everything that is wrong and against God. And every person sitting in this room has had that moment in your life sometime. And some of you may not have been able to complete it and to fix it and to get it there, but at least you tried. And some of you just turned a blind eye to it and said, "Oh, well, it's the way we've been living. God will just have to accept us the way they are." But Jacob doesn't want to do that. When he meets God back at the place where he met him for the first time many years before, he wants his family to be pure. I am almost positive and almost sure that that Rachel still has been worshiping his favorite wife. Jacob's one, he's in love with his favored wife, has been worshiping the idols of her father that she stole from him. And you remember, she stole those idols, and when the father came to try to find them, she stuck them in a sack underneath a camel saddle, and she sat on the saddle, and she lied and told her father that she was in her time of the month, which made her an unclean person that a male could not touch, so not even her father could pull her off that saddle of that cattle, and she was worshiping. And then we got the promise. You notice it says they pull the rings out of their ears. Here's what you need to know. Jewelry of any kind on a male, in the ears, in the nose, or anything like that, was strictly forbidden under God's economy. Women, we have a different deal. Rings and the ears and rings in the nose were used as signs to men of certain things, but men were not to wear rings in their noses or in their ears. They were a sign that they belonged to some God, that they had dedicated themselves to someone that was in power over them. They did it because they worshiped false gods. So here they take out the rings from their ears, the rings from their nose. All the guys do. They get all their gods. And Jacob buries them underneath an oak tree there in Shechem. So somewhere in Shechem, there's an oak tree that has a burial of gold rings and silver rings and idols, be them carved out of metal or carved out of gold or carved out of wood or whatever. They are there because Jacob is cleaning house, and he does. As they journeyed there was a great terror upon the cities which were around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. In other words, God allowed that the rumor got out that you don't want to mess with the sons of Jacob. If just two of the boys of Jacob could destroy all of Hamor's men, just think what all 11 could do. And of course, Joseph's only 1 year of age, maybe a little older at this time. Oh, he's probably 7 or 8. But you just know they don't want to mess with him. Don't want to mess with him. And so no one attacks Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz. It's going to be called Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan. And he and all the people were with him. And he built an altar there and called the place El Bethel, which means the door to God, because there God had revealed himself to him, and he fled from his brother. When he fled from his brother, we fled from Esau. Jacob is back meeting God where he met God. And just so we know where that is also, Moses gives us another clue. Verse 8. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died. And she was buried below Bethel under the oak. It was named Elon Bakuth. Rebekah's nurse, Deborah. Never heard the name Deborah before. Heard the name Rebekah. Rebekah's Jacob's mother. What does this have to do with anything? The point is not that Deborah has died. The point is that Deborah was buried underneath this oak, and the oak tree that they have arrived at to build the altar at, to where Jacob is meeting with God again, is in the place where the oak of weeping is. That was the name they gave that tree, because trees became monuments in those days, because trees lived for 100 years, and they would actually name those trees and call them by those names. So that all Moses is doing is telling us where the altar was so that we would not go someplace else. When you go down to Bethel, you go out to the place where the oak of weeping is. That happened to be the place where Deborah was buried, Rebekah's nurse was buried, where Jacob's mother's nurse was buried underneath that tree when they gave that tree the name the oak of weeping. That's all that means. Deborah was a nurse of Rebekah. It doesn't mean that she took care of her medically. It meant that when Rebekah was born, Rebekah nursed from the breast of Deborah. And because she did that, she was the maid of Rebekah, took care of Rebekah all the way through her little childhood years, all the way into her adult years. And whenever she agreed, Rebekah agreed to leave Haran and go marry Isaac, she was one of those maids who came with Rebekah down to Beersheba when Rebekah married Isaac. And Deborah had died. And they named the tree the Oak of Weeping, so that everyone would know where that was. That's all that means. Verse 9 says, "And then God appeared to Jacob again when he had came from Padan Aram, and he blessed him. And God said to him," for the second time, by the way, this is not the first time, "God said to him, 'You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name.'" He'd already told him to start calling himself Israel, and Jacob had refused to. Jacob was continuing going by his name, Jacob. Now God is saying, "You shall be called Israel." Thus he called him Israel. God also said, "I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come forth from you." Nothing new. The very same message God gave to him here, he has already given to him before when he told him, "Your name is going to be Israel." Verse 12, "And the land which I gave to Abraham and Isaac I will give to you, and I will give the land to your descendants after you." Nothing new. Absolutely nothing new. "Then God went up from him in that place where he had spoken to him, and Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he had spoken to him, the pillar of stone there by the tree of weeping, the oak of weeping, and he poured out a libation." When we get over to Exodus, the libation offering is called a drink offering, where they pour out a drink. That's what this is, a libation. "And he poured out oil upon it." So Jacob named the place where God had spoken to him Bethel. In other words, the house of God. "Then they journeyed on down from Bethel, and they continued on down south." And they're headed down towards Bethlehem. They're not going to quite get to Bethlehem. And Rachel is going to go into labor. Rachel has been pregnant during this time. "So then they journeyed from Bethel, and when they were still some distance from Ephrath, that is the town of Bethlehem, okay? Rachel began to give birth, and she suffered severe labor. And it came about that when in the severe labor, that the midwife said to her, 'Do not fear, for now you have another son.'" Rachel was the mother of Joseph, and now she's the mother of Benjamin. "And it came about that as her soul was departing," for she died, "that she named him Benoni. But Jacob changed that name to Benjamin." By the way, Benoni means son of my sorrow. Benjamin means son of my right hand. Benjamin is calling that because, remember, Rachel was his favorite wife, the love of his life. And she called him the son of my sorrow, but Jacob said, "No, he is going to be the son at my right hand, and he is going to refuse to allow this son, Benjamin, to leave his right hand." You remember when the sons came back from Egypt to get dad and get Benjamin? Benjamin says, "You may not take my son. He will not leave my right hand. He's not going back." And so the people, his family begins to starve again before Jacob finally says, "You got to go back and buy some more grain." And the sons say, "We can't go back without Benjamin. He's not leaving my right hand," Jacob says. "The son of my right hand," the name means something. And so Jacob set up the pillar over her grave, and that is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. Moses is saying when he's writing this, we can go to that pillar right now. By the way, that pillar is underneath the top picture, that little temple area that they built over it, that you could walk in and see that pillar. You notice it's got two little entryways, and there's a gate with a sign on the top of it. That's the, after many, many years, they built that around these pillars. Rachel's tomb is the third most important religious place in the heritage of the Jews. Later on down, they built a compound around that. Middle picture. This is the entryway to the compound. I mean, you have to want to go there to get there. And by the way, it's not even a safe place to be right now. You have to go there to get there. And look at the bottom picture. If you'll notice, there is those two columns with the sign. If you look up in the top picture, you see them facing us. Down on the bottom picture, it's kind of an angle. And you see they've built a building all around this building. And that building happens to be air conditioned and heated. If you get in, you may be fairly safe because of the way they've built this building from any gunshots or whatever. I should have gone ahead and showed you some other pictures where they actually have little safety cubby holes so that the priests, the Jewish leadership who are in there can get back into those little cubby holes in case some sort of firearms goes off. They can hide. Verse 21. Then Israel journeyed on, and he pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. Rachel has died, remember? And Rachel had a maid, Bilhah. And it came about that while Israel was dwelling in that land, that Reuben went in and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Israel heard of it. Just like before, Israel didn't say anything about it. He's not going to say anything about it, and I'm going to speed up the story. Chapter 49 of Genesis, when Jacob is on his deathbed and he is laying out the blessings for his sons, his first son, Reuben, the first son, the oldest, is not going to inherit Jacob's wealth, is not going to inherit Jacob's blessing. Because of this act, this defilement of Jacob's concubine, Rachel's maid, by the name of Bilhah, Reuben has lost his birthright. Now, there were 12 sons of Jacob. Sons of Leah were Reuben. These are in order. Jacob's firstborn. Then Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. The sons of, and by the way, after Zebulun, she had Dinah. Dinah comes after Zebulun, the girl. But he's talking about sons here. The sons of Rachel were Joseph and Benjamin. The son of Bilhah was Dan and Naphtali. The sons of Zilpah were Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob that were born to him in Padan Aram. Actually, that is not a correct statement. 11 of those sons were born in Padan Aram, including Joseph. But Benjamin was born right outside of Bethlehem. That place, the name was changed to the place called Ramah, the place of mourning, the place where Jacob mourned the death of his wonderful, beautiful wife, Rachel. And then it goes on in verse 27, says, and then Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned. And so on the little map, they made it from Bethlehem. They were on their way to Dad's house. They get down to Hebron, and there they are. That's where they promised that they would meet up with Isaac. I mean, with Esau. And Esau's there, by the way. And they meet up there. And then Moses does something very interesting. Because they have met up with Isaac, and Moses has a lot of story to tell, Moses is going to sum up the life of Isaac in the next two verses. He doesn't tell us that they lived with Jacob and Esau and the families and all lived with Isaac for a long time. He just goes and says this to sum up Isaac. And he's going to summarize several things in the next few chapters and then have to go back and start over telling a different story in a different strain. He says, now the days of Isaac were 180 years. And Isaac breathed his last and died. And was gathered to the people, and an old man of ripe age, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. And of course we know that they buried him in the tomb with Abraham and with Sarah. And so I ask a question over here. When did Isaac die? And what were Jacob and Joseph doing when Isaac died? Because if you just take it like it is and don't think through it, you say, Isaac just died, and the start of the next chapter, Isaac is dead. But Isaac is not dead yet. Let me show you why. When Isaac was born, he lived until he was the age of 60. And at the age of 60, he and his wife gave birth to Jacob and Esau. Jacob lived until the age of 91, and he had Joseph. Joseph, at the age of 17, is sold into Egypt, into captivity, which begins, that story comes in chapter 37. And at the age of 30, he is put on the throne. And the age of 39, he brings Jacob, his father, and all of his family to live in Egypt. And there the text tells us that Jacob was 130 years old when he moved to Egypt. Joseph is 39, Jacob is 130, and Jacob lived 17 more years and died at the age of 147. So follow me here. How do we know that Jacob was 91 years of age? Whenever, because that number is not a number that's given to us. I've been telling it to you in and out for many, many weeks now, but here's where we get that number. The Bible tells us that Jacob was 130 years whenever he moved to Egypt. The Bible tells us that Joseph was 30 years of age whenever he took over as second in command of the kingdom. He collected food for 7 years, and then he moved the family, his family, to Egypt at the end of the second year, which 7 and 2 is 9, means that Joseph was 39 years old. 39 from 130 means that Joseph was born when Jacob was 91 years old. You follow me there? So where is Isaac? Isaac was 60 when Jacob and Esau was born. At 91 years of age, Isaac is 151 years old. Isaac is going to live until he is 180, which means in the same year that Joseph was pulled out of the jail and made second in command, Isaac died. So in other words, Joseph knew Isaac because they're living in the same area for 17 years of his life. And then over the next 13 years, Isaac did not know whether Joseph was alive or dead. And neither did Jacob, Joseph's father. Well, with that, we pick up next week with another difficult lesson to teach as we look at Moses summing up the life of Esau, not only from this point, but all the way until they're going in to take the promised land after they've been in Egypt for 430 years. Moses is going to sum all that up in the very next chapter, and then he's going to come back and tell us about Joseph being sold into captivity. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time to study your word. We love you. In your name, amen and amen.